here. I was never particularly big on the Bushes during the Nixon and Reagan years when George Bush Sr. seemed to have a kind of private escalator in which it didn't matter if you lost elections. And if you lost two Senate elections in Texas, it didn't make any difference. He still had these connections.
Now, good resonance. Okay. So anyway, George Bush Sr. in Texas in 1964 and 70 lost two elections to the Senate. It didn't matter. He was on his own escalator. Family ties to the establishment, to the Republican Party, and as I now think, to the intelligence community, and he rose accordingly. And then in 1980, although the only additional thing that he had on his resume by that point that mattered much was having been director of Central Intelligence, runs against Reagan in the primaries with no great credentials and doesn't do all that well, but winds up getting selected as vice president. So some of my concern about what he represented and what his family represented was really a product of my time in Republican politics. And as you may remember, the noted Californian Ronald Reagan didn't think much of him at all. Nancy Reagan couldn't stand him. John McCain ran against him. Ross Perot called him a rabbit. So the notion that the opposition here is all Democratic and all from the left, that's not true at all. There are a lot of people, but I have to say, they're now older people who remember this family in a disadvantageous light, and a lot of the people that went into Republican politics in the last 15 to 20 years are far more sympathetic to the Bushes. Now, the key word in my book title is dynasty. The whole notion that you have a family now that is able to pass along in considerable measure the presidency. I was on one of the conservative talk shows last week, and the host wasn't entirely sympathetic with my thesis. But then he started to think about what was involved here, and he said, you know, in 1980, one of the national winners was named Bush. In 1984, one of the national winners was named Bush. 1988, one of the national winners was named Bush. 1992, one was named Clinton. 1996, one was named Clinton. 2000, one was named Bush. 2004, probably one is going to be named Bush. And in 2008, is it going to be Jeb Bush running against Hillary Clinton? Well, interesting possibility. Now, if it does turn out to be the case, what do you have in this country? You have some real inroads into Republicanism with a small r, and democracy with a small d. And there are a lot of indications that there are dynastic elements really emerging in congressional and Senate patterns, in New England particularly. You have a pattern where a lot of people are sons and daughters and brothers of politicians. So it's starting to look vaguely hereditary in an odd way. And this was the point that this fellow, who was probably hostile to a fair part of what I'm saying, thought probably was true, and he was a little concerned about it. Well, I think that the dynastic aspect here is important for two reasons. The first is that over four generations, the Bushes have risen to importance in the United States in considerable part because of their ties to the intelligence community, along with many other portions of the establishment. And secondly, some of you will have read the books that have been published alleging that the Bushes or George W. are liars. You know, all these books with titles about being a liar. Now, this obviously isn't new. Looking at this audience, many of you, like me, will remember many other liars in America. I mean, we had Lyndon Johnson, we had Richard Nixon, most recently we had Bill Clinton. Now, I think one of the critical distinctions here is that they were all first-generation liars. They were self-made prevaricators. What you really have with the Bushes is they've worked up to it over four generations. And I don't say that entirely as a joke, because the whole notion that the ties to the intelligence community have been absolutely central in this really go all the way back to World War I, which I'll come back to in a few minutes. But one of the aspects here which is hinted at by the talk about lying and deception and disinformation, is the extent to which this has been systematized in certain ways. And the systematization really has to do, I think, again, with the ties to the intelligence community and the extent to which the intelligence community almost routinely sort of denies that this happened, it didn't happen. There's a disinformation, there's a pattern of deceit, there's cover-ups, all of these things are par for the course. Now, what I'll try to explain is the way in which there's probably a logic, but there's certainly a truth to the pattern of this being apparent, not only in the two Bush presidencies, but in the previous generations, including the grandfather of the present president, who was a U.S. senator from Connecticut, my own state, from 1952 to 1962. Now, starting to look at the Bushes in the intelligence community, before I do, I'm going to talk about the patterns of deceit in a way that should be different, to show that there is a degree of systematization going on here. The important point to make is the significance of Machiavelli. Now, you might say, what does Machiavelli have to do with anything? But the answer is a surprising amount. Karl Rove, the political advisor to the current president, is a reader of Machiavelli and said he owed to him his appreciation of the fact that appearances will often trump reality. Now, that's not a big deal. I mean, lots of people know that's true often enough. You can't make much out of that. But Rove was also quoted as saying that the political advisor to the former Bush president, who was Lee Atwater to George Sr., used to reread Machiavelli once a year in order to keep up on the wisdom of the master. Now, the difficulty here is, which people in the press don't seem to have done, is you really want to read Machiavelli. And in The Prince, which was Machiavelli's most notable book, his basic advice is that you want to sound like everything you say is about family, goodness, religion, society. But the reality is that success comes with deceit, and that the greatest successes in the politics of Italy in the late medieval period, in the Renaissance, came from people who were deceivers. Cesare Borgia, Pope Alexander VI, and then in another book, he wrote about the importance of fraud as opposed to force, and held forth at great length about this. Now, my sense is this is basically what has been happening. And I don't say this as a joke at all. If you read these things from Machiavelli, you sort of have a sense that you're reading a description of the modus operandi of the Bush White House. Because they really do take all these things that are supposedly about concern for people and religion and so forth, and then you sort of wonder what relation they bear to the real policies. But the answer is they bear a very important theoretical and tactical relation. Now, let me come back to the involvement of the Bushes with the intelligence community, because this is absolutely central. Now, if you go back four generations, you see two great-grandfathers of the current president, George H. Walker in St. Louis, who was a go-getter, thin and